Hello and a welcome to The Dive presented by Honda Season 4, Episode 29. This week, Azale is off because we kicked his ass out. he's actually on vacation, much like I was on vacation last week.
No, he's moving this week. You don't even know what your best friend is doing.
He was on vacation. That's true, Mark. He was on vacation. His vacation is done. And he decided he's just taking extra time off to move. I like it, Mark. Get him.
Get him.
Sorry, I got distracted. I saw my cat rearing up behind me. Yeah, Azale's
Start to the episode.
He's a slacker. Mark. I hate him. Ah.
Honestly, though, we really just wanted to have more freak time.
Aw, thanks. I appreciate that. that you lie to say nice things about me. Thanks, man.
Anytime, freak.
Yeah,
anytime.
Of course. Happy to lie to me whenever you want.
I will lie right to your face, buddy.
Yeah, speaking of liars, freak inserting things into people's, you know, saying that they said this and when they didn't.
Yeah, Mark, who was actually Prawley.
I'm just gonna contradict things you didn't say.
That's great. This is gonna go really well, Mark.
There's a decent chance that our viewers have no idea what you guys are bumbling about right now. Let me catch you up on the drama for everybody watching. Me and Freak were casting, and it seemed a little bit random, just to kind of out of the blue. Freak was like, decided to correct Mark Z on something that he thought Mark Z said on the analyst desk. Take over, Freak.
I don't remember what the topic was anymore. I legitimately don't remember. Go ahead.
It was Phantom Dancer and Hex Drinker Stacking.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently at some point, Prawley said.
Okay. So Prawley said, you know, yeah, Phantom Dancer and Hex Drinker used to stack back in the day, but they changed that a couple years ago. You can't get two different lifeline paths. And I was like, all right, listen, Mark. Phantom Dancer never had the shield back when Lifeline could stack, so Hex Drinker and Phantom Dancer could never have stacked because it was never a possibility. They've never stacked. You've never had it right, so get it right.
Technically,
saying, unlike Mark said, was like the throwaway line, but Mark took like so much offense to it that he's like, all right, listen, for this analysis segment, I need everyone to get on with me and just correct Freak with everything you ever said.
They weren't down. They said it was too rushed of a decision. We didn't have time to plan the segment.
And you did it anyway.
I did it once.
Exactly.
Just to add some more fire to like a dead argument that we should be moving on from. Technically, for Prawley's side, the old Phantom Dancer that did not have a shield, you could buy it with the Hex Drinker and it technically does not stack.
Yep, great.
All right. Now that we've got a win for me in this argument as well that had nothing to do with me. Honestly move on to the patch because Pro Play is moving on to this patch 10.15. And like we said when we previewed it 2 weeks ago when I was still on the show, looking at it for the future, and I was pretty happy that they're nerfing all these mandatory pro champions from pick ban.
Yep.
And I actually think they did a decent job on most of them.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. So Aphelios nerfs, great. That's a really big one. What's kind of unfortunate is the way Riot has to do pro play balance is they're always an extra patch behind. So like they have to react to 10.13 to do 10.15. And mm-hmm. So champs that show up in 10.14, they literally cannot react to until the patch afterwards. So for example, in 10.14, which is what we all just watched like last weekend, Bard doubled in pro pick rate and became the number one support when he was like number six for like the 7 weeks prior. Suddenly he's the number one support. So Riot's like, okay, we'll get Bard next time, I guess.
Yeah, they already released like the little preview hints for 10.16. By the way,
right?
Bard is obviously on there,
but it just means that some of the nerfs aren't in line, right? So like Thresh got nerfed, even though he's not the number one support anymore because they couldn't have known when they made the patch. Phyllis was number one, cool, good job. Like they're hitting Lee Sin, which is like the number two overall jungler. TF's like the number one or two overall mid laner. There's a lot that's aimed pretty well, so it will shake some things up. But because of that factor, I know we're kind of like cheating forward a bit, like. There's like S tiers like Volibear and Bard who are not getting touched yet.
Yeah. And to be fair, like the actual nerfs that they did put in, I think the Thresh one was definitely one of the more minor ones.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hit him that much. I was looking a lot at the Twisted Fate one because I have a bunch of mid laner friends and they're still playing Twisted Fate, even with the pick a card nerfs. But it was such a cool it was like an interesting nerf to me because it nerfs multiple ways because that ability has your stun and your mana gain from blue card. Yep. It's kind of like a double whammy with the cooldown actually going up. And yeah, most of them were complaining about solo queue matchups to me. So I don't know if it's going to hurt pro play enough to push him completely out of pick ban. He was almost 100% just banned. So maybe it opens him up to getting picked more often because the main matchups that people were complaining to me about were stuff like Fizz, you know, and assassins that are constantly engaging on them and they don't have gold cards up all the time for all these engages. And the blue cards try and sustain after that. It's certainly going to be a universal nerf. Like, it's going to hurt him in all scenarios, but probably more in those ones.
Yeah. A lot of the nerfs feel pretty reserved, I guess, for pro play. Like, none of them got the hatchet taken to them, quite like you could say happened with Yuumi a couple patches ago, where they're like, all right, here's an insane new, like, mana nerf. There, see how that goes. Even the Aphelios one, none of them are technically damage nerfs.
It is in the sense that, like,
there's less missiles, so it's technically a damage nerf,
right? And the rate, like, the range is shorter, so you might not hit something you might not have hit, so, like, you know, damage will be down, but if you're hitting them anyway, you're still hitting them.
Yeah, so it's a pretty reserved nerf, all things considered, and he's been getting dinked over and over in these patches, but they're clearly not trying to take anything out of pro play right now, like with these TF nerfs and Thresh nerfs.
Nudging stuff down, which is cool. I think Caitlyn is OP. I think she's the best AD carry now after the patch. 2 AD and 5 move speed does not sound like a lot, but I mean, she's shot up in win rate. She is the highest win rate solo queue marksman right now, just flat out. She's number one.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you're sorting by a platinum up, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, hey, in like moderately high elo, like, you know, top 8% or something like that. Like, she is the highest win rate marksman. Karthus is higher. Karthus is also OP, by the way. Teams should be playing Karthus more, and they're not. So, but yeah, it's not like she's hard to play. She's a super lane bully. Teams really care about bot lane dominance. They care about Drake stacking. Like, she fits the meta game really well. She can punish the crap out of Aphelios, even though he can have sniper gun and heli gun. You can still push him down. Like, his base armor is super low. So I think she matches up well, and she matches the meta game.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see a lot of her and Ashe. Kind of fighting over that because Ashe also has a pretty good mid game compared to Caitlyn, where people usually kind of complain about Caitlyn. They're like, all right, it's so great in lane phase, I love my auto attack range. But then of course once you get multiple items, feels great. I wonder if it's gonna do much as far as changing the meta for sieging, because that is one of Caitlyn's big strengths. I love the snap traps for setting up for dragon fights and sieging towers. I think it'll be really cool if she does come back, because it's going to cause a lot more preparation issues for these objectives when you have the ability to trap off an entire ramp or an entire side for engagement.
Yeah, it's really good. And to talk about her, like, supposed mid-game trough, which I know people talk about, I think this is actually less a function of the champion and more a function of people are building Caitlyn improperly.
Attack speed.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So this will be really short, hopefully. The optimal Caitlyn build is Infinity Edge, Stormraiser, Essence Reaver. Do not build Azeal. Stop at Zerg Greaves. You don't need more attack speed. Just because of the way her base stats work, I will spare you the math. You don't need to build more attack speed on the champion. You will not trough if your second item is not Rapid Fire Cannon. If it's got a BF sword in there, you will feel good on two items. You'll have 800 damage headshots, and you have a good mid game. So if you see that build, that Caitlyn is just good throughout the entire game.
And I'm gonna just interject, because I did like when we were talking to you about the actual math, and I don't think it's super complicated or takes super long, and will add, you know, some fruit to people.
My eyes are
watching.
Glazing over.
Yeah,
because it's something that isn't, you know, you don't read in the kit. But
it's
exactly. Freak's talking about, you know, your base attack speed, like your original value, and then the champions get per level that is effects off the base value. So if you have a bad base value of attack speed, that's what all of your purchasing of attack speed affects off that base value. That's their lever to control. Is buying attack speed good on this champion? And Freak's explanation of Caitlyn having a bad base one, but really high per level getting bonus free attack speed was that she's a sniper. And I was like, you know what? I'm actually buying it. That actually makes sense, because they want it thematically attack speed to be a bad stat to buy on her, but she still gets per level good.
Right. She feels so like a normal marksman. Exactly. Right. When you play her without doing anything, she feels normal, but she actually scales really poorly off it. So she lines up there. Yeah, it works out. She has AD scaling everywhere. You stack BF swords. It's a really good build. So yeah, I think she's super good. Irelia's getting buff, which is nice. Lilia is out, and I have put between 25 and 30 games.
What is that, Kobe? Already.
What? Okay. What is this? What is this?
No, I'm just doing my reactions to Lilia. I have won every game against her and lost every game with her on my team. Of course, let me also state that the balance team a couple months back made a post stating that they no longer want to follow in the track of releasing all new champions as super powerful so that they... previously there was this ideology of, okay, if it's too weak, as people are learning it, they won't play it, and then the champion will never get picked up. They stated that they want to change that ideology to have release champions be more balanced, and they know that by virtue of doing that, designing them where they think they'll be balanced, they'll come out very low win rate because people are still picking them up. And I just want to say that is the case for my personal anecdotal experience in solo queue.
Right. So the idea is like instead of releasing them intentionally strong because players are bad at Lilia, it's like, no. She is theoretically balanced and you're bad at Lilia. So low win rate. And I'm 20 plus games in on Lilia at this point. I'm like solidified in my build. It's basically the Rumble build. You're doing Merc Shreds Ninja Tabby. You're doing Runic Echoes into Rylai Liandry's. Liandry's first, way better item. And then like maybe Banshees, maybe Zhonya's, maybe Void Staff, probably not Death Cap ever. And it's just like, all right, be bruiser-ish, be kind of tanky, go magical footwear because you want like more base move speed because of all the percent scaling on the kit. I play her really, really, really greedy. I take all the farm and try to hyper level because basically once you're in mid game, once you have rank 2 ulti, it's like a 2.5 second sleep. So basically what the character like early mid game has really good skirmishing. You run fast than everyone. They don't have a lot of hard CC. You're on a 2v1 lane ganking. You just chase them down when they flash. You just land another Q and they die. It's great. You have blue smite. You chase them down. It's wonderful. Once you're in late game, you have an 8 second cooldown Ash Arrow. You have a global range skill shot that slows for actually 6 seconds with Rylai's because the passive triggers spell effects, which means it will trigger Rylai's for longer. Mm-hmm. And in the first 2 seconds, you can then hit the sleep button where they then go to sleep for 2.5 seconds, which is a long time. Then you walk up and you land an 800 damage sweet spot W, and so they die. And so you just throw Ease over walls, walking them down the lane at global range. It's really, really good setup. You can multi-hit if they're grouped together. It can splash off of minions and multi-hit that way as well. It's actually really good engage. You pick people off, and you're a damage champion. Works really well.
Ash Arrow,
a little disingenuous ahead, with the whole cross-mapping it with all the walls that exist. Because I think that's
sort of global.
It's sort of global. I mean, that's one of the things that's so good about Ash is like, oh, they're skirmishing in top lane. That's like, I'm in mid lane, but they're at like... outside Krugs, I can just shoot it and it's still fine. Lilia basically needs to be in the same lane already.
Yep.
Yeah. And
you try to get some CDR because the E cooldown like gets pretty short and you're just lobbing stuff. Like if you're zoned out of a team fight, you just throw it down the river, you just hit somebody. It's really good.
Yeah. And because her passive burn doesn't have an AP ratio, that's why you're going for magic penetration and going for a lot of these flat value items. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm glad that Freak is here to be the Lilia proponent and trying to, and talking her up and hyping it. Because for me, what I would recommend to people who see it against them, pick, if it's a lane, pick like Renekton into it. Because it's so freaking easy to just slice and dice on her. She won't have her move speed stacked up. If she doesn't have her move speed stacked up, you slice and dice on her, she's toast. Like Renekton now also building Blade of the Ruined King. Like you get one Empower W on her, and she just melts. So I'm gonna recommend that. For jungle, I've been playing a lot of Kha'Zix. Just happened that Kha'Zix also works really well into her because when she's walking around the jungle, same thing for me. If she ever comes to the river or ever comes for invades, she doesn't prematurely have her move speed passive stack. And if she's isolated, like she's actually just dead, I have a really easy time navigating fights with her. So I think that's definitely a key. A lot of these champions have similarities of being able to engage very quickly and navigate these spaces. So
all right, enough Bambi talk. Let's get on some more interesting champions. All right. I think the Skarner and the Swain buffs both interest me. I don't think it'll be enough to get them into pro play yet, but they have been in pro play in the last 2 years with some degree of, you know, success, Skarner and in the jungle, Swain, more top and mid than, you know, the changes to Skarner, they made his Q more tank bustery by making a lot of it like targets percent and max health. Freak apparently did some other math on this and said that it's just a straight nerf right now.
It's a straight nerf in the early game.
Yeah.
Like it's like Skarner's top lane win rate went down like 4% to fight champions. And it's just like, yeah, you're actually just not a champion in the early game. Like no matter what you do, you just don't do any damage. So I guess get bent. In the jungle, it's closer because like a red buff has 2000 health. So the damage is close. And so his like jungle win rate's kind of flat, but like, yeah, the damage on Q is completely crap for PvP early game. You probably should still max the stun first. I don't think we're going to see him played. They're actually buffing him next patch. They're adding some damage back on Q, so then he'll be playable.
Yeah.
It's funny because I want to do like a phone a friend with Captain Flowers because he's constantly talking about Skarner, obviously. He's the main champion. I remember watching his stream when these changes were announced, and he was like, it is just a universal buff if you're building Cinder Hulk Skarner. And now that it's going to get a follow-up buff, I think that he'll be happy on 10-16 with those changes.
Yeah, I mean, the 80 ratios are gone. So, like Warrior Skarner is dead.
Yeah, I feel like I always see Skarner in that meta into some of the other tanks too. Like when Sejuani's are around, and I feel like Skarner usually shows up in more of those meta than like the hyper skirmishy ones. And I don't think we're really in a super skirmish jungle meta. We are a little bit with like Graves and stuff invading, which is probably a nightmare for Skarner. But
you know what I think of when I think of Skarner buffs around playoffs time? I think of Sven. No, I think of Sven and him being in playoffs, going to
he
be playing
when he sees these patch notes.
High chance that he plays against a Skarner is all that I'm saying. If he's getting buffed on 10-16 as well. Right.
This is game five of the finals.
Everybody's going to remember that TSM shift.
Team win again.
For me, my personal buff that was the most standout on this patch, just for personal reasons, is the Shen one. Because I just love playing Shen. I think this is a really strong buff. It's a lot bigger for lane because obviously you're trading over and over, and you get your shield a whole bunch for lane trades. And in the jungle, I didn't really need more health. Shen has like a 0.7% play rate in the jungle, so I'm one of very few people that like playing it in the jungle.
Okay.
It is another buff to incentivize playing Shen. I think that for pro play, and that's where our focus is with this 10-15, because it's being picked up for pro play, he should just be really, really present in pro play. He was already so good, as we saw in the hands of Impact, but with this buff to his trading in lane, there are just so many melee matchups. I feel like he was already kind of unsuspecting as being quite good in a lot of these melee matchups where he can hold on just fine. And with the buff to the sustainability with the shield that you're constantly proccing, I think Shen should be a mainstay.
Yeah, Shen's always been pretty disgusting into tanks if you can hit the pull through. It's 5% level one of your max HP. And you get that three times with your Empower Q. So you do 15% max HP as well as having a flat damage tacked on there and your actual AD. And then you're getting a better shield now. If you get pull through, like you absolutely clap melee matchups. So I was surprised to see that the base shield, a flat 20 increase.
It's huge.
Across the board.
I'm
rip buff.
Yeah, I'm definitely blown away by it because
on every team's inventory, right? Like every team should be willing to play Shen. I don't know if he is going to be the go-to top laner. I mean, maybe he's the go-to top laner, but like he should be played.
And I'm saying junglers should be practicing
flex pick
so you can flex it if the enemy tries to apply some super hard counter like range abuse on you or
Singe
mage.
Is really good. I is my understanding. Singe actually collapsed that lane.
Yeah, that makes sense with the poison trail and everything. And
it's like, what are you gonna block?
Your refuse doesn't really block anything. So I have small hopes because in the past in years, I've talked to professional junglers and they're always like, "Oh, I got this secret pick, jungle Shen with Hail of Blades." And I'm like, "Yes, I'm playing that." And then it has never made its way in jungle onto the LCS stage. That I think that's one of the main problems with it as jungle, though. There's no keystone that's really that great. I think press the attack is my personal just favorite, because it's generic. You can, you know, increase damage taken for teams and stuff, and he doesn't really have any that can scale, because grasp is by far his best keystone. If you're playing at top, you better be playing grasp. And it's just that's just terrible for
Kobe.
Jungle.
The last time Shen jungle's been played in a top four league was Diamond Procs in 2014, and he lost.
Diamond Procs. I see. It had to be one of the creative junglers.
What keystone did he take? Some boomer kid's asking that right now. No, not boomer. Zoomer kid. We're boomers. Whatever.
It was played last year in Latin America against Elise in one. With
what keystone did he take?
Yeah.
Oh, Aftershock.
Aftershock. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, it depends so much. Like if you whiff your taunt, you're already so screwed, and it's
yep.
Which everything on that.
Yeah.
I find that. Press the attacks is like a decent in all scenarios. Okay, that feels pretty good for 10-15 though. I'm excited for the shifts, because like we said, all those pick ban champions basically getting about 1% or so taken off.
Yeah.
Yep. Team Liquid's peaking. Shen buffs. They had Bard buff most recently, like you hear Freak talking about. This is the
Jat still has connections on the Palace team. Oh my God, Mark, you just blew my mind.
And Singe is the counter pick, I think, to Shen, if I remember correctly. So impact it's more impact buffs. I know.
We're gonna have to keep an eye on this one, Mark. We're gonna create the board. start drawing the line.
I'm gonna start wiretapping people.
To start off our entry into the LCS section of talking about the teams. Our writer decided to come up with this parlay bet. Parlay bet is I'm going to give you five options. You choose three of the options that you think will come true. And I'm also going to partake in the bet because I didn't come up with it. Writer came up with it. And I think I know the best answer. So,
and the parlay bets only pay out if you hit all three.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So here are the five choices. A non-Cloud9 member wins MVP. Team Liquid wins the regular season outright. To me, I'm choosing both of those because I think those are tied. They're like, if one of those happens, the other one is happening.
Then this is happening.
Yeah. Core JJ or Jensen is going to be my non-Cloud9 member that wins MVP. And it would have to be because Team Liquid wins the regular season. Then we have the difficult part for me because those are my first two. CLG wins two games. I guess that's just
the last
two more games.
Yep.
TSM wins out the entire set of weeks. Or Huni has two or more deathless games.
All right. So, see, I agree. The first two are great.
Yeah. I'm just assuming that you guys are just going to bandwagon on those first two.
The first two is
like
easy.
Those are match made in heaven.
I think it was one of those things where, like, you didn't realize how connected those two were, because if, like you're saying, if one happens, the other happens. So you got to take those.
Mm-hmm. Well, but hold on. So double checking though, no tiebreaker means there wasn't a tiebreaker with C9, or after the tiebreaker with C9, their first place. Because if they both 4-0, like, does that one fail?
True.
Yeah.
True.
If they both 4-0 and there's a tiebreaker.
That's the less likely, because I'm down with Core JJ winning MVP even if like C9 wins tiebreak or whatever, because Core is standing out so much. Like, yeah, you know what? I take that. Like that's a pretty close bet overall. The TL one, okay, C9 has to drop another game, which is gonna
be experimenting. TL's
but it
not
can happen.
Right,
yeah,
I think
happen.
It's possible.
CLG are playing Team Liquid, Golden Guardians.
FlyQuest C9.
They're playing all top five
nine.
Teams.
Oh, basically. My.
The three
that was
top
out, I'm
teams.
Not.
Like, they're done.
All right, that was
TSM,
out.
EG, C9, Golden Guardians, Team Liquid. They're not 4-0-ing that schedule.
C9. Okay, you have to beat C9.
C9 and TL. They're not 4-0-ing that schedule. There's no way.
TSM so Huni, also is a tough one.
Two deathless games. Deathless is hard. Deathless is hard.
Yep.
What's
Liquid? Immortals, C9, 100 Thieves. So Immortals I'll give you, right? He can deathless against Delorum, but against Someday, Licorice, and Impact?
So these three are all hard. I'm actually going
to
go...
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. He's on Dig still to me. I'm actually trolling.
He's on EG. Yeah. They have TSM...
Keep thinking about
they have TSM, FlyQuest, Golden Guardians, 100 Thieves. And even 100 Thieves, who's arguably the weakest team, has Someday.
Someday, yeah.
My bad. I'm so used to Dinghuni. I've gotten that wrong so many times.
He was on there for like a week.
Yeah, but he was
enough
part
to get
of like
that contract.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna actually go with the TSM wins out. They beat Cloud9. What are you guys both taking? Okay. Hooney?
I'm taking
Hooney Deathless.
I think I'll take Hooney. Oh gosh.
See,
I think
Hooney
Deathless is over TSM 4-0. I'll take Hooney Deathless over TSM 4-0.
Two times.
Yeah.
I like how you think the TSM 4-0 is more likely than the CLG one. I think the CLG one's more likely than the TSM one.
Beat Golden Guardians, beat FlyQuest, something like that.
Beat Golden Guardians and one of the other team ints.
Yeah, like, okay. That's actually not that bad.
You know what?
Yeah, actually, CLG is probably the most likely. Here's the thing, though. CLG have been free-falling.
Yeah, I think TSM's the least likely of the remaining three options. And then it's pretty close between Hooney and CLG for me. But
yeah, I'm out. I'm out. I changed my mind. I pull it out.
I think I'll do the Hooney bet.
Hooney two deathless games.
Yeah. The CLG one.
Which two games?
Do I have to pick the games too? Or just
no, I'm just curious. You don't have to. What do you think are most likely the two games then?
I think
Golden Guardians C9.
Golden Guardians.
Cloud9?
I mean, or FlyQuest. But FlyQuest are like pretty sharp.
I would say even like TSM, you know, like none of these teams play around their top lane too much.
Whoo.
I know, right?
I'm doing the CLG.
Golden Guardians, Hotster's on an island.
CLG, then.
Solo gets played around sometimes. All
right, I'm calling the bet now.
Yeah, it's over.
I'm doing the top three. I'm including CLG. Are you guys both doing the Hooney one as your third?
I'm doing the Hooney one.
Okay.
I'll go TSM 4-0. We'll just cover them all.
I was going to say, yeah, Freak, do that.
Yeah, I'll just do TSM 4-0.
Throw your money away.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Actually, TSM are my stock bet right now, by the way. And, you know, they did okay.
I put mine in 100 Thieves and FlyQuest.
I think I all in TSM as well, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
They 2-0 so far. They got to beat CN and EG.
There was a lot of talk about the Cloud9 Team Liquid game. So I think we should do a little bit of review of last week as we start talking about the teams moving forward as well. Obviously, the first thing for this game is the composition. You know, we got the double shields. I had already heard that teams in scrims have been playing Sona Lux bottom lane for the super shield lane. So I was super ready for it. I was excited that we got to see it. They played it pretty poorly with a lot of these fights. There were moments where I would, and I even checked and I was like, oh my God, Impact has Shen ultimate available. And, you know, Hecarim's charging in like there's a Shen ultimate coming, but you know, it never came. And there's a lot of these fights where they kind of force without ultimates in sync and kind of making a lot of misplays within that game. What do you guys think of the comp overall? And
yep.
What was that the biggest part?
So I want to start with talking about some people I saw comparing it to like the old school Sona Taric bot lanes and stuff like that, or Sona TK. And I don't think it's anything like that, especially when you look at the solo lanes in contribution. You know, this is a dive comp straight up. And like you're replacing Taric's invulnerability and heal with Lux's long range damage to help snipe out kills onto backline while providing shields to like, you know, that's how you're going to prolong the fight. Sona TK or Sona Taric could reset fights with the ultimate, with both ultimates, and then they could heal up after. They could posture around objectives for a long period of time. You often paired it with a poke champ like Jace in a solo lane with range to land these kind of standoffish situations, and then some kind of all-in tool with the Taric ult or to use that for disengage. TK was also a defensive option for the Sona, who actually does scale pretty well, but she needs to get her items, and it takes a while to get there. And oftentimes, you were pairing it with a ranged mid laner. C9 had all melee topside. Shen, Set, Hecarim. That's just straight dive. And
yeah, it has to be.
And the shields are there to protect the dive. And like, you know, you're trying to blow someone up. It is nothing like those other comps in any way other than that you have double mage bot lane or double support bot lane, whatever you want to call it.
You're running Spell Thieves on a Sona who's farming. Yeah.
And you do have sustain for like being at the objective and like kind of drawing them out and then turning to dive, but you have to make the
You have zero poke. You actually don't want, there's no reason to want a stalled out situation at an objective because you have no way to trade that damage back except on Lux bindings and ease.
And Lux is maxing W, right? Like like she is there to be a shield bot. The Sona, obviously, as Sona does, maxes W first as well, 3 points Q early game. And I want to point something out to interject like on the builds as well, because one of the key differences between 2020 League of Legends and last time Sona was popular is they changed the Spell Thief's line to keep the minion gold reduction even on tier 3. So Sona, like the way Spell Thief works, by the way, and same for the other version with attack damage, is you can get 20 CS per 5 minutes before you get gold reduction, which means you can get 4 CS a minute, and pro players get 10 CS a minute. So you can't even just get the melees before you hit the cap. So Sona doesn't get to like, oh, I'm going to trigger Spell Thief's early game and then just go take farm and get Lichbane death cap and be a carry. She is going to be stuck getting 7K gold in a, you know, a 25-minute game, because you get your spike of 1,000 free gold through Spell Thieves. Okay, great. You get your spike of Spell Thieves is worth like 1,500 gold worth of stats for 400 gold worth of item. So it's another 1,000 gold you spike. And then you stop getting gold income. So either you need to win the game at 20 minutes, or it has to be functionally over 20 minutes, or your jungle needs to go and poach your lane because you're done farming for the most part. Like, your gold income falls off a cliff once you go to tier 3 support item. So you like, if you want 3 items, don't go Spell Thieves. Like, if you're trying this at home, like, oh, I want to try like Brand Vel'Koz bot lane. Enjoy not getting to 3 items, because you won't anymore. Like, your build will stop earning money. So you either, you know, go get a carry jungler who takes that farm, or be happy being 2 item Sona, because that's where you stop.
Can't you just not, you know, use the extra gold generation though, and just say, you know what, I have the item, and I'm just going to decide to farm anyways, and not, you know, care about the it turning it off.
I mean, it turns off minion gold. Like, minions are worth half or less gold if you keep farming, which means, yeah. I mean, if you want to get 9 gold per melee and 7 from a caster, that's great. But I mean, why did you do this build then if you're expecting to get, you know, functionally 5 CS a minute for the rest of the game, right? Like, you just become a 5 CS per minute carry, which is just garbage farm.
Right. And comboing that, like, people say, oh, Sona's so good at, but she's only good at scaling when they talk about her damage. Yep. Like, you need the AP items, you need your Lich Bane, like, and like all these things to really get her scaling off the ground. And to Freak's point, you've kind of kneecapped yourself relative to those old Sona builds where at 25 minutes you're online. In this game, when you look at it, she has Archangels.
Yeah. And you almost Lich Bane. Yeah. When
they start losing the fights, she's getting close to Lich Bane, but she's not like power spiked in any way. Yep. She has a sheen, you know, like it's
honestly, I'm glad to hear this, because I don't want the full return, you know, of it. Being meta. Sure. And that's what I was saying afterwards. I was like, okay, I'm glad that we got to see, you know, this strat, or, you know, and some, you know, experimentation. But I'm also glad that the first time we saw it wasn't a stomp and in their favor. And I'm glad that they lost with it, because then we won't have, you know, everyone just jumping on board of, you know, crazy heal.
I mean,
bottom.
To be fair, I still think it's a good comp. I know a lot of people feel like they had a pretty good draft, and I still think it should be good if played well. I just don't think they played it super well, and I'm sure there's two components to that we'll probably dive into: the itemization, which got the vast majority of the conversation, and then the play. I don't know which of those two you want to hop on first.
Probably the play first, because I think it's really quick.
Okay, yeah, exactly. The itemization is quick. Also, I think the play was way more important.
Yeah,
I'm in the way more important play as well. The criticism to itemization starts with one big fallacy, which is like how much magic damage the enemy team has. Like, you know, people are going as far as to claim 5 AP, which if you look at the damage graph, which, you know, it's in that post game thread, but it's 42% physical damage. Most of that coming from tactical, but Broxah, people consider, you know, Trundle an AP champion. He's not. You know, Trundle's magic damage was 1.8k. His physical was 3.6. So literally twice as much physical damage.
It's not a lot of damage in total.
Right. Yeah. He's largely negligible no matter what. But it's still more physical if you're gonna start treating him like a champion anyways. Then treat him like what he is, which is a 66% physical damage champion.
Right. Like Trundle did as much physical to champions as Blitz did magic damage to champions. Like, if you're gonna call Blitz AP, you better call Trundle full AD then.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna do that.
Yeah, and so, yes, the as well, people say Ezreal's mixed damage. He had 5.5k magic damage, 19k physical damage. Once again, that's a 70%, you know, 60-70% ratio of physical damage.
It's almost 4-1. It's almost 75%.
Yeah, flat out, people are saying they need to rush MR. It's an all magic damage comp. No. Some of these champs still need core items. Set in every lane. pretty much rushes a death's or a dead man's plate. Yeah. Mid lane, bot lane. If you go look up the builds, people are always rushing it regardless of matchup, pretty much. So like some of these, you could say the Triforce, maybe. I still think they needed damage in the mid lane. So I was fine with that because their bot lane is not bringing that much damage. They are a dive comp. You know, they need to burst someone. And so like when I'm looking at that, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. You want to burst someone with your Triforce. And so I was fine with that build. I think there's other areas that do deserve some criticism though.
Yeah, I think we need to organize this a little bit because overall damage dealt by Team Liquid from that post-game screenshot, it was 40-something percent was physical.
Yeah, 42.5.
42.5 overall from the team. Like, very significant. And because, you know, Tactical was popping off with Ezreal, with Trinity Force Ezreal. So the criticisms purely against armor I don't think are good. Specifically, I like Ninja Tabby because it also reduces Ezreal's Qs, and a lot of his damage comes from Q poke, the passive, because they count as autos. Specifically for the Frozen Heart on Shen, though, I agree that with the criticisms that people are throwing at Licorice building Frozen Heart, also because you're against Ezreal, who is out of range most of the time, throwing Qs from super long range, and also the Trundle and the Mordekaiser, I guess
Mordekaiser builds Gnasher's Tooth.
Some value out of it there, but not really. And so that's why I like, even if you're making the cooldown reduction argument, because Shen doesn't even use mana, so it doesn't get anything out of that out of it. I like Kindle Gem more. Kindle Gem could build into even like a Spirit Visage or something later
on. Triforce Shen, it's not like built too.
It's not like points. A dead piece. So I do think the Frozen Heart is valid criticism for the team. A lot of the other things, like you're saying, so I like the Ninja Tabby still because of Ezreal, and then Dead Man's Plate, the mobility is so good on set. That's why you see it as a core item on set, to be able to position for good ultimates, to be able to actually get his gap closers off. And it's just, you know, that's the only a armor item that he had built there too. So I think is just some of it is overblown, but there are definitely some valid criticisms, like the Frozen Heart.
Yeah, the final point I throw on the boots is I can see some of the criticism for Tabbies. And the thing I'll say though is Merc Treads aren't that much better. In terms of flat MR, they're not a super efficient item. And there's only one stun on the enemy team. Everything else is CC not affected by Tenacity. And so those are basically, you would be buying those just for the MR. And generally, that's not considered efficient. Like, most people will tell you, if you're getting mercs for just the MR,
you're kind of trolling.
Yeah, you should just be buying, just buy an MR item. Yeah. That's usually what they'll say. And I agree with that. So maybe Swifties was better. Tabbies might be okay if you're saying we're going to go one small armor item for the
Ezreal. This is one of the best Tabbies games ever. If you want armor, it's actually auto attack based. Ezreal does not do non auto attack physical damage because Q essentially is an auto attack. It's like, yep. Trundle, his only physical damage is auto attack. Like, this is the best Tabbies will ever be for you.
Yeah.
So that's my final thoughts as well on itemization. Gameplay, the spicier one.
Yeah, because it's Cloud9 making bad choices and getting punished for it. And I thought that was one of the biggest issues here, because people are starting to talk about, should we hit the panic button for this team? Largely, I'm going to say, no, you don't have to panic, obviously. I mean, you're in such a good... That's like one of those first world problem memes that they have, where like, oh, do we panic now that, you know, we're still at the top and yet we're, you know, having some sorts of issues?
Yeah.
I wouldn't completely panic, obviously, but it definitely is kind of worrying for us that, like, this stuff is already starting to show up.
Yeah, I think there were two big misplays in that game. The first one is the Drake at 23 minutes. We're talking about them being this dive team comp, and they basically don't control bot river very well. They're kind of standing in there. They let TL walk in and get full control of Drake, and then they're in a front-to-back situation. You know, Licorice TP's straight on top of a ward in front of them, as opposed to the one behind them in the river. And then they just run at TL, which is not great for your comp. You want to be flanking, dunking someone back into the team, blowing them up, this kind of stuff. And that's where they kind of lost their first fight, like 2-for-1, and they started to give some gold back to TL. And then there's, of course, the mid lane one that everyone talks about, where yeah, Licorice just didn't ult to protect his Hecarim, who then loses the 1v1 to Ezreal, where he probably wins if he gets it off because he was running away from Mordekaiser and didn't want to get yoinked back. It just looked like some pretty poor play. It's like they got hooked. Instagib took a fight down 4v5. Were slow to react with TPs and ults and stuff. That's just bad play. That's not, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and they played also really well, right? They were up 4.5K at 23 minutes. They are one Drake away from Soul at that point, yeah. And then just blitz hooks getting picked off. Like, they lost control. And the game was going to start falling away gold-wise anyway, again, because of Spell Thieves thing. But, like, they were in a commanding position where they hold on for 4 more minutes. They get Dragon Soul, they close out, and fights went bad. So I think Xenon's still a good team. They're still top two. I still take them as the best team in the league. Because, I mean, they were actually beating TL for most of it, and I give a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. And I would say also with the people like taking away from Cloud9, I think Team Liquid actually dealt with it pretty well too. Tactical does a very good job kiting in this, not allowing such a heavy dive team to have easy access. You can see he, even in points where he does, you know, get hit with a Hecarim Fear or something like that, he's kiting at so much so that it's hard for the shielders to follow up on the Hecarim and give him stuff like that. So that in combination with the Blitzcrank pick, you know, Core JJ obviously played it really well, getting a lot of key pulls. He used his ultimate to break some key shields, like the set one everyone's talking about, like 1,000 HP worth of shield at one point for that mid play was also quite strong.
Yeah, I think Core JJ single-handedly won this game kind of for TL with his pick and his play. Because everyone else was really struggling, you know. Impact was 0-4. Jensen was—he eventually started picking up kills, but it was later in the game. He was getting bullied quite a bit early on.
Probably Jensen's worst game of the split. Honestly, he's been so good for this team.
It was honestly the game that made me flip from like more on the Jensen MVP train to more on the Core JJ MVP train, because this is a game where I think they lose without any other support in the league. Or with any other support in the league, excuse me.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, a lot of it was getting the third pick Blitzcrank. Like, I wonder if Xenon or any team runs his comp back, you only pick at red side, you pick at 2-3 on red and then ban Blitz, or you wait till you see a support picked on 1-2 and you can play like I wonder, right? Like, is there a chance that this becomes, you know, another piece of the champs like puzzle where if Blitz is not pickable, you play Karma Lux, or you play Sona Lux, but only when Blitz is unpickable?
Yeah, I don't know, because it is a weird comp to close out on, like you were saying a little bit, with like you have with all so much physical or so much melee, it's hard to hit turrets. It's hard to defend turrets if you fall behind. Like, it's definitely you need to snowball. And if Blitz is just going to remove half of like what your comp does with shields, that feels kind of hard to play into then, because you only have one way to win. And if Blitz is negating a portion of it. And it did take Core JJ some time to figure out some of the trades in bot lanes where like Shens were ulting in. He didn't save his ult quite properly, but you know, it was a bit of a learning curve. I'm sure he was like figuring out in game as he went, like, oh, I need to save my ult for these key like set W's and Shen ults and stuff instead of Lux W's.
Which, as a side note, is kind of cool, because I remember when the designers were talking about like adding these things in. I mean, Aurelia used to have one. Renekton still has one on the Empowered W for shredding shields, which is sometimes useful in top lane. But this one actually is one of those situational counters that you get to see it in action. Feels pretty good.
Cool.
I agree.
Good teams.
Both teams are good.
Both teams are very, very good. These are the two teams that I have the biggest nod going to Worlds. And let's talk about the other teams that might go to Worlds. TSM and FlyQuest, as we move forward, are doing very well. 2-0s on the weeks. As I said earlier, TSM is my stock buy. To be fair, I happen to overlook FlyQuest a little bit. They're a really good pick as well. Both these teams look solid. These are my nod for 3-4, like right away. And especially if C9 is actually slumping, this is 2-3.
Yeah, I mean, they are technically 2-3 right now, heading into the week.
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say,
what do you mean? Cloud9, Team Liquid are tied for first place.
Oh, you're saying TSM Fly? I thought, was I confused?
Yeah, I'm moving on to TSM Fly as the third, fourth place teams. But maybe if C9's actually a pumpkin, then they're the second and third best teams.
Because C9 is what, 1-4, 1-3 in their last 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, they've had like a fairly bad set of runs.
Yeah, so you can make the argument. I'm still not making that argument.
Wait, yeah. Okay. I think they've had 3 1-on-1 weeks, I think is what happened with Cloud9.
Was that what it was? Yeah. They're definitely struggling, but FlyQuest has been pretty inconsistent for me as well. Even that game versus Golden Guardians is one that they probably should have lost. There was definitely some weird build choices in that one that we kind of talked about, like with the Hex Drinker PD kind of thing. And if Golden Guardians played a little better, they easily could have beat them.
Yeah. So this is another itemization thing. I don't think that was like your build choice. I think Turtle just, you know, forgot. I already have a Phantom Dancer and, you know, double stack the shields, and he was like, okay, so doesn't have the shields. I think he made his conscious choice, like, you know what, I still get like the lifesteal off of the Hex Trigger.
Yeah, it has
magic resistance, it has AD. No, it was
just, you just go QSS or Death Dance, like, exactly. You just make that choice.
Exactly, it was just an oversight. The QSS that people are criticizing, upgrading to Mercurial Scimitar for Power of Evil, he had the Mercurial Scimitar for actually 2 seconds before they ended the game.
He defended himself on Twitter quite well.
Yeah, exactly. His purchase of QSS right before the fight was to get a QSS right before the fight. You can't just make an entire ideal situation where you get a Banshees, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I still think that they look pretty good overall ever since Matt or Turtle came back in.
Mm-hmm.
TSM, I'm still a little, like, even though we got that 2-0 freak, got our stocks up, you know, high five, They could have easily lost that CLG game if that Blast Cone wasn't there. That was, like, the greatest Blast Cone plant of all time to get them out of that Galio ult from, like, three-manning them.
Oh, yeah.
Next to Baron, too. If you lose that fight, that's Baron, and that's game over.
That game. Oh, my God. Now I'm just remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon fight and ruin. Ruin going mini Gnar and then teleporting late, and then them also making the call for steel and fighting. I was just like, there's so many, you have to say, miscommunication things that are going on, because it just seems like what is the plan here? So many things are going wrong for Counter Logic Gaming. I know that we're on the TSM FlyQuest side of it right now, but.
It's your
side where I saw so many, like, all these TSM fans, like, oh my God, we're lucky to get this, right? Nobody's filled to the brim with confidence after that.
Yeah, I mean, CLG had pulled the gold lead back at 31 minutes, right? And that was like right before the catastrophic team fight that took the entire game away. That flight flips, they're up 5k and they close out in 3 minutes. Like, yeah. it was one play from CLG being like, okay, you played them close and you got your team fight, good job. It means that, hey, CLG can be the team that wins too. It means, yeah, I still have my reservations on TSM. End of the day, though, TSM are still the team coming up with wins. Like, as ugly as it kind of looks, right? That's what TL looked like for the first 3-4 weeks. It's like, oh, well, you barely won that one, and you barely won that one, and you barely won that one, and now they're tied for first. So at a certain point, it's like, well, but you did it in the end. So I still say, like, hey, look, TSM, you still did it. You still did win. You're still good. Like, I like these players. So, and I like Broken Blade on Ornn.
I'm going the other way. They had Dig and CLG, who are arguably the two worst teams in the league right now. Where you want to slot Immortals, maybe breaks it up. So maybe they're the worst three teams in the league. And sure. They were not, like, the Dig game was a little bit better, but the CLG one wasn't clean. And then their next four games are all hard, like we were talking about earlier. EG, yep. CNI, Golden Guardians, and TL. Like,
yep.
I'm getting flashbacks a little bit of when we were talking about CLG and they were 4-2. And it was like, well, who'd you play? That's kind of how this 2-0 feels to me,
yeah.
A little bit, where I'm really not that excited about TSM, despite owning their stock. Like, this was not a confidence-setting 2-0.
I'd say I am confident in Bjergsen still. Bjergsen has been playing really well, and I like Treats that, you know, since they put him in, I think he's performed quite well. Another instance of strong Academy performance. Spica, with the treacherous invade game, you know, definitely had a really bad weekend the weekend before. And so there's still a lot of variance there, as there's a lot of variance with a lot of the teams, but especially Spica, Broken Blade, and Double Lift himself.
Sure.
A lot of variance in those, the play from those three. And that's where I think your worry can come from, Mark, of, you know, how secure you feel with the games, even the games that are in hand. So I do like the shift, because I was kind of calling for it as well, to have Broken Blade play more conservative and, you know, having him on more tanky champions or, you know, taking less risks of resources towards that side is a good move for this team.
Yeah. I want to spend a little bit of time going back to FlyQuest. We talked about them briefly. I'm really, really hot on FlyQuest. I actually...
That's why I bought their stock.
Yeah, it was smart. And I actually wish I had. Like going back, because I did all the prep for this next week's games last weekend, and so I wrote in all my FlyQuest notes. Santorin is number one in like a million different jungle stats. He's like the only player in the LCS with above 50% first blood rate. Like, that man is in first blood in more than half of all games, and no other player in the league does that. He's like number two worldwide for this stat. He has a ton of like really, really positive stats. Every single player on FlyQuest, you could make a case for his top three in their role in the league. I legit, for all five, you can make a case for top three in the role. Like, I think they're all very, very good.
No way for
I,
Turtle.
Okay, Turtle's the odd man out in that case, yeah. But like, he also has like five championships or something. Like,
he's no stinker for sure.
Yeah, and so it's like, these are all actually absurdly outstanding players. Like, they're good all around. No one super stands. Like, people talk about PUE, and I'm talking about Santorin, but they've got threats everywhere. I think they're consistent everywhere, and they have players who, like, on the right day is an MVP level player. It's like, this is a super, super scary team.
Yeah, I mean, I was so excited about Solo's performance because I know this guy is such a strong top laner, and then his Renekton into Kennen counter pick here, which has for maybe 5 years always been a Kennen counter pick to Renekton for lane bully, but he talks about with the change to unflinching, having all the extra tenacity in lane with double tenacity runes, being able to shrug off the stun, and that being enough to change a matchup when you can have just that little bit of extra time to close the gap in a matchup that all hinges on a Renekton closing the gap and getting to the Kennen and getting your W off. On top of that, obviously,
face checking makes it easier.
Face checking, if that goes in too early, he gives him the solo kill first. And then after getting the kill and the heal afterwards, he can just leave and not even die after that gank. That is one where I actually felt so bad. As a jungler, you head to a lane and your laner does that. And they're like, oh, yeah, I was baiting for you. Or I was like, oh, I'm trying to start this off. You get there and you waste all your time and you arrive to the party and this stuff is on fire and the Renekton has just solo queued your lane opponent. There's nothing that you can do, and then they just take over the entire game. Like, that to me was a big point. I had already invested my stocks in FlyQuest because with the last few weeks of them losing, I know everyone was losing confidence, but the players are still the same, and I think there's just a lot of variance in best of ones, which is causing people to get super hyped and then also lose confidence in teams really quickly off of these sample sizes. And you kind of have to judge, was it an aberration for each individual player, or is this like, is that what you know to be this player's true value?
I think that's why people often, myself included, hold on to past performance as something that they really care about. Like, when a team makes it to the finals in spring, doesn't make any roster changes, and then struggles a little bit in best of ones in the middle of the split in summer with like some little, you know, 80 carry roster change, and then they put their new guy back in. Like, I'm still kind of thinking about that finals run with this team, you know? And that's why when you look at all the other teams struggling and all these things going on, EG's flopping their roster completely, and everyone else doesn't have that pedigree in that sense. No other team has that history that they do. I think that's why it's attractive to be like, that's actually probably a pretty good team. They're just making some weird, doing some weird stuff in the regular season. Same way with C9 struggling. Like, the reason I don't lose any confidence in them is like, well, because I know how good they are when they're playing well. I haven't seen other team ceilings yet, but I don't think that they beat FlyQuest ceiling. Maybe TL does.
Sure.
Do you think Caitlyn returning is going to help any specific teams?
TL.
Everybody's going to say, for me, Stixxay, because everybody just remembers his MSI performance for Caitlyn. But I've seen people even like, oh, you know, maybe...
I think teams that ignore bot lane will get punished by opposing teams picking Caitlyn, because it is not hard. Like, Caitlyn is one of the AD carries that can actually safely just auto the turret and not be afraid of a Thresh, like, flay or something. Mm-hmm. And so if you're actually ignoring this lane and your jungle doesn't show up, you're going to lose your turret at 10 minutes, and then she's going to go mid, you're going to lose your mid turret at 14 minutes.
Yeah, it's one of the things where people forget why we don't see lane swaps anymore. And yes, there was just one in the LEC where, they had the fiesta of lane swaps. Mm-hmm. So don't take that as an example. But the reason why lane swaps were removed, the seed of it, is the first 5 minutes on the mid and top turret, the extra 50% damage reduction on those turrets, it's not there in the bottom lane. And yep. Caitlyn, that is how you expose that. That is one of the things that I think should be pushed forward with this champion.
Yep. I'm interested to see who can use it well. Like, because FBI, I don't know his history well enough when he was still in the OPL, if he was a Caitlyn player. But ever since he's been in North America, Caitlyn hasn't really been meta. But he is such dominant laning stats, and he has such a great laning phase that, like, I think this could potentially, if they utilize it well, be a great new wrinkle for them to just, like, have FBI on, like, sick mechanic, sieging turret Caitlyn duty. Mm-hmm. So there's someone who's a bit of a, like, yeah. I wonder. It could
FBI
be
has
good.
9 total pro Caitlyn games. He's 4-5 on the champion. But, like, you know, it's 2 games behind Aphelios, where clearly he's only played this for the last year or so.
Yeah. I mean, he's young, so you don't have quite as much to pull off. But yeah, he's one I could see using Caitlyn. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they have the most forward percent of any lane is Golden Guardians bot lane. FBI and Huhu are constantly pushed up. Kate Karma is just oppressive. Like, the slow makes you land the other Q. You just chunk the turret down. You get a bunch of gold. Yeah.
I think they have highest CSD at 15 as well. I think they have, like, maybe it's 10 or 15. I forget which one. And I think they also have highest gold difference.
Yeah,
or one of, and same with.
I know he really plays for lane, so, like, it makes sense, right? That's their.
He's not
roaming
a ton. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I feel like Huhi has just been so much better on set, because I was remembering back to the other game where I was just talking so much about Huhi and giving him a lot of praise. It was also a set game.
Yeah, when they beat Immortals, I think.
Yeah, so I think I want to see more diversity in his champion pool with these really impressive games, but I think that he definitely has the potential, you know, for the Golden Guardians bottom lane to really push this lane up. But they're tied at 7-7 with Evil Geniuses right now. So this is our next tier of teams that are within striking distance, and I think both of them can make those moves, because even though EG had some, terrible losses again, I still like the move with Huni and Golden Glue coming in. And if they focus on really abusing these champion pools, these specific champion pools, you can't get banned out on everything. That to me is the key. Because Huni draws a Rumble ban every game, but that's as far as teams are going, as far as the target banning versus EG currently. And I don't see a reason to deviate from Golden Glue on Zoe, Huni on Gangplank, you know, putting people on these champions that you have the, you know, strongest affinity for.
Yeah. I mean, on that draft point, I can definitely see what you're saying. And I think you can get more standard team comps with Huni than you could with Jizuke, who, like, you're almost just never going to put on a control mage, regardless if it's, you know, Zoe, but, like, Orianas and Azirs and Cassios. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't think you'd ever want to see Jizuke.
You have Bang, who can play Aphelios Ezreal every game, seemingly.
No one cares.
To deviate.
No one cares.
I understand the point about the draft being a little bit better, but in terms of play, man, like, I don't know how I can watch that gaming, like, you know, like, oh, there goes Uni on Camille. Whoop. His hook shot's up. Time to use it.
Oh, my God.
So, like,
the flake around with 50% health where he just gets destroyed by Orianna before the whole thing happens, and the lack of coordination with the combos. Oh,
that was so rough.
Yeah, that's so, like, I'm even
Mark. Hello, he wasn't on Gangplank. I clearly stated as a part
his GP
of
GP game. He flashed in for a Q and just kind of misjudged the damage. I actually don't hate
it. It was
one.
Off by actually, like,
barely
double digits. That was like 20 something HP.
Yeah, okay, I won't criticize that one too much, but, like, he's gonna make those kinds of plays. And mm-hmm. they're going to lose sometimes. And so in terms of play style, even if you've changed the comps to be closer to standard, you're not really playing standard, which is where I'm still kind of like, about EG at this point.
So you're more high on Golden Guardians then?
I'm more high on Golden Guardians for sure. EG is still a coin flip team to me that's going to rely on one of their soul laners who's either going to pop off or they're going to tank the game.
All right, what about, give me the Golden Guardians then.
I already did.
Golden Guardians is solid. The team's good all around. They got a really, really good bot lane. They got a really, really good jungler. Hanser's, I think, doing better than he was last split, right? Hanser seems to be like a real threat up there instead of just like being a top laner.
He's got some of the best laning stats in the league, and he's always playing weak side. Like, he doesn't get jungle help, which has been true for him for almost his whole career since he's left TSM.
Yeah. I mean, even on TSM, right? He's on double of TSM. Like, that, he's still playing weak side up there.
Yeah. So, like, you have some of the best lanes in the league. They have some of the best goal differences at 10 and 15 because they generally get leads in the early game. Their problem is their team coordination and team fights kind of bad, and you can see that in their FlyQuest game, both at the Drake fight where Hanser doesn't flash his ear ult, and then the one later in red jungle. They need to iron those out, but I still like the base of what I see in my mind, where it's like, okay, really good laners. Who are they going to transition into like some sort of team fighting? Closer's good. FBI is good. Hanser can be good. Demonte can be good playing the supportive role. Like, their team makes sense to me. They just need to clean it up a little bit. Whereas EG, I'm like, what are we doing?
Yeah. And I mean, they're headed to playoffs almost certainly, right? So technically they can lose out, but right now 9 wins is playoffs and they're at 7. If Dignitas lose a game, 8 wins is playoffs. And again, they're at 7. So, you know, realistically, if they win like a game or if they lose 2, they're in, which seems pretty likely. So we're going to see them in the postseason. Like, we're going to see them for another couple of weeks here. And yeah, I think they are close. Coordination, I agree, is kind of the big issue with Golden Guardians, of just getting that team together appropriately. But they are close to being a real threat, as opposed to just like a decent team.
I'm what trying about you, to Kobe?
I'm trying to project to the future, because I think playoffs is going to be 10-16.
Yes, 10-16 is playoff patch.
Because we're finishing 10-15 on the regular
season. Yeah, they've already announced that like that's the goal, that 16 is supposed to be the summer split playoff patch.
And in 10-16, they're buffing us a bunch of stuff like Ziggs and Veigar. And
nerfing Karma.
Yeah. And I see, though, I don't see those as much for like Demonte champions. Golden Guardians have had a lot more success when he's, you know, this push in roam.
There's a Kali buff coming. That's like one thing.
True. It says that the buff, at least on here for his preview, is just that E damage type is going from physical to magical.
Yeah. I've seen another list that has 5 damage on Q and E is magical. So we'll see which one they go for. Okay. Either way. Yeah. I we'll see if it's enough. Obviously Demonte, he said in interviews, like, he wants to play assassins. He doesn't like the control mage meta.
Yeah.
So Kali,
and that's what we want to see him on, right?
Yeah. Aurelia's buffed in 14. So like, you know, if he thinks Aurelia is valuable, and Aurelia is magic resist skewed. So she's actually typed to be good in mid, you know, maybe she can go beat up Orianna. Like, that'll be fun.
Yeah. All right. Now we're getting so theoretical with this giant list of buffs
from
so
this
many
weekend. EG or Golden Guardians, Kobe? Who would you throw your money at?
They're playing in next weekend.
Yeah, they're playing week 9 Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. The second or last day of the split, they are playing. So we can build the matchup if we want. Mm-hmm. Gonna take in the final week then.
They're probably gonna play first week of the playoffs too. But keep in mind, like, 3 through 6 just plays each other in the first round, right? 1 and 2 get a bye, and 7-8 sit in the lower bracket. So 3 through 6 is first round of playoffs. These teams all play each other. TSM, FlyQuest, EG, Golden Guardians. They're gonna scrap on week 10, basically.
Honestly, something that I am a bit worried about is Sven Skarren on EG, because Sven Skarren has really high highs. He also has these big dips with various teams through his career. And he's been having kind of one of these quieter dips where his counter jungling percentage has gotten very low. All of his kill stats are getting quite low for the team. So, and if you're going against Closer, who is constantly invading, putting pressure on, you know, jungle 1v1 and calling laners over as well, that might actually tip it for me.
Yeah,
I think I'm gonna have to watch Sven Skarren pretty closely in the upcoming week to see how I'm gonna predict that final weekend Golden Guardians EG game.
The one quiet thing Sven Skarren's doing is his vision stats are actually among the very highest in the league. His vision score per minute is number 2 at Smithy. So like, that's pretty solid, and that's often not very flashy. It's fairly hard to notice, but he's
to
at least
me,
doing that.
You also, whenever anyone cites to me vision scores, my immediate reaction is, how many games have they taken Zombie Ward?
Sure.
Because Zombie Ward is free vision score. Like, if you want to play a stats game, take Zombie Ward.
Yeah, fair point.
All right, we'll keep sliding down the ladder. CLG, 100 Thieves, Dig, Immortals. Who jumps out to you the most to want to talk about?
100 Thieves.
Yep.
Are they great or are they not? I keep getting hyped up. I'm like, oh, look at this. Boom. Contracts invading. Someday. Who? He gets him ahead. Now someday he's, you know, doing counter jungling of his own and finding enemy jungler. And they have these, you know, crazy combinations. And they looked great with Ryoma on Galio backing up that aggressive play. But then you have the other side of it as well. So I'm still more excited to talk about them, though.
Yeah, I would say of those four teams I listed, they're the best. Yes. I think they're definitely in playoffs, probably in lower bracket, only because they started so poorly. I think this roster swapped version is much better than the original lineup as well. Mm-hmm. I think they're just in a little bit of a hole, and they have a couple too many issues to completely ignore. I like Poom a lot, and considering he's such a green player, so inexperienced, you know, I think a lot of these things will get improved over time. But he can get targeted pretty hard in some of these games. The core JJ one, he got absolutely taken advantage of by his Bard. And I think it was this week as well against, I think, Golden Guardians.
He lost to Golden Guardians.
Yeah, I think that was maybe the game that he struggled with. There was one game, I think.
That was the set
game. Yeah, I think it was I think that was the one.
Yeah.
But either way, he has high highs and low lows for Poom, and I think that comes partially due to inexperience. So I don't have any problem with it. But if we're just talking about raw strength right now, it is an issue a little bit.
Yep. 100 Thieves, yeah, they're two games behind getting an upper bracket start with four to go. They're already 0-2 against Golden Guardians. They play EG and lost the first time they played them last time. So if they lose to EG, I think it's actually impossible to like take a spot over EG at that point. Barring some weird three-way tie stuff, like that would have to be a win you take if you want a chance. Regardless, they're going to wait for like the first round of playoffs to play out. So they're going to play the loser of like EG FlyQuest, which means EG rematch, you know, that kind of thing is like where they're kind of headed. Overall, yeah, it just feels like they're not quite all the way there. I mean, switching your roster through the season is going to do that to you. I think joining them is more likely Dignitas than CLG. Dig are one game out of playoffs, I think. Though I still give the nod to Lorlo, I'll give Viper credit for his last game where it was actually pretty solid.
The Volibear.
Yeah, it went well. Like, and you know, Drawdock ran around free farming and got a 4-level lead over his opposing jungler, and then they won. It was good.
Yeah, I'll be confident if they can have Aframu on some sort of engage or CC support. I get really, really worried if I see Dig without him or Dardoch, preferably both, with tools to force the game state, because in the games that they did not have those tools, they simply looked paralyzed. They're like, oh my goodness, we're outranged and we don't have any engage. I guess we have to give up everything until the end. You know, so maybe it also, like, Champ Select, everyone's talking about how important it is right now, but I truly think there were some pretty big errors from them. And I even talked to ThinkGuard, and he talked about there being a miscommunication in at least the first game, not so much the second one where they had it. Yeah, in draft. So he was saying they were originally starting to build it around AP Kog'Maw, and then that's why they drafted all this disengage of Trundle and all this peeling, because they were going to be the ones with the big range advantage with AP Kog'Maw, and they were going to have to peel. But they ended up switching it to a Kog Lulu bottom lane into the Yuumi, and if you're Kog Lulu, then you are on hit Kog, or you're trolling, because that's all the bonuses that Lulu is giving you. And on hit Kog'Maw does not outrange, and then you have no engage for them. So
it's set up for the free fire. Yeah,
exactly. Like That is a miscommunication in a pivot in Champ Select that they pulled out. That did at least make sense. And then you're in a game where you neither have the range advantage nor do you have engage options.
And then what about the Karthus?
The other game was the one that was right after it, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I mean, so that's what my problem is with Dig. I actually think when they get what we all think is a good comp for them, they look pretty competent. But the amount of times that they don't get a good comp is a little concerning. That can easily, not saying it's all in think carbs, like players sometimes panic and I need this, yeah, I can't do that. You know, like why'd they pivot in that game? It was, maybe it was the coach, maybe it was the player being like, I can't play Kog mid here or something. So either way, their drafting is, I think, actually one of their biggest concerns for me, as well as what's going on in the top lane. I think that's one of those things that I'm still kind of watching closely.
I guess that just leaves Immortals after after their kind of the initial hype of like, oh yeah, they put the other roster back in, and Insanity and Alorum are both playing well from Academy. Yeah.
I like Alorum. I'm sad we're not seeing Soaz, because it still feels like, hey, what worked for Immortals in the first split, and they did okay in spring, was, all right, you know, pound for pound, the other players are better, but through Xpithy and Soaz, we surmise they're getting cool shot calling wins, they're out-courting their opponents. And again, I like Alorum, I think he's a great dude, but like, he does not have the experience that Soaz does, right? Like, that breadth of knowledge is not comparable, and we're losing that X factor that Immortals actually had, where they would pull out wins from their hat, and that was like two or three of their games, which is, you know, like a third of them, right, were those. And they don't have that anymore. They just have a, you know, a serviceable team who is in last place and will sadly probably remain there because the other teams also leveled up when this roster came in. Like, if none of the other teams made roster changes, they'd probably be about an eighth place team. But Dignitas got better and, you know, everything else went down. And well, sorry, you know, these teams improved above you again.
I will say, too, like, I just wish teams were a little stronger with their messaging sometimes. You know, Immortals has done a little bit more of it, but it's still not, you know, they're talking more, but they're not saying more in some ways, you know, where there's more communication, but I'm not learning a ton. Because to me, like you're saying with the Soaz point, I 100% agree, which says, if I'm reading into what they're doing, we don't think we have a chance at making Worlds. We don't think we have a chance at really making a run in playoffs, even if we had Soaz in. Maybe we're a seventh place team instead of a ninth place team. So screw it. Let's get Alorum more practice. Let's get Insanity more practice. Let's evaluate if we really want to use Alorum next split and make this whole thing about 2021, which I'm fine with. If you're
a good message.
Yeah. I just don't know why, like, if that is what you're doing, you can say that. And I know that might depress some fans. Or maybe, you know, it'll make your players feel worse if they're playing for an org that's not doesn't really care about this split. But at the same time, your messaging, your actions are already saying it.
Right. And it means you have a goal in mind, right? Because with a void of messaging, people tend to assume the worst. And it's, you know, like, there can be cases where, like, branding-wise, like, we actually can't say anything. Silence is the best
option. Maybe Soaz is like, screw all you guys. I don't want to play. I hate it here in America. Use Alorum. I don't care. Like, that's possible. But your job as a PR then is to spin that into something fans can be excited about. We believe in Alorum, you know?
Yeah. We want to give him another full year because we really believe in him. You know, he's awesome. Like, we'll see you in 2021. It'll be better. You know, we're going for experience. Like, okay, at least, like, there's a goal and you're saying, hey, look for us next year. It'll be great. That feels better to me. Regardless, here they are at 3-11. It's probably going to end up 3-15. And congratulations, you got the CLG scoreline.
They have some winnable games next week against 100 Thieves.
Yeah, they do.
They could pick up one more, but then their final week is TL Fly. So I think, you know, they're looking at one more win probably.
Yeah. I mean, their goal right now has to be, and their focus has to be on building for the future. You're just saying you want them to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
because it clearly has to be.
Yeah, it is what it is. Like, everyone already thinks it. I think just
And hey, if they can win those games, right, they'll be 1-100 Thieves. They're already 1-1 with CLG. Like, those are two teams that if they can drag them down and tiebreak at 5-13 or whatever, like, okay, you can tiebreak on Sunday for the last playoff spot and squeak in. And hey, what a miracle run it would be to, you know, reverse sweep your season. But yeah, it seems unlikely.
Okay, for the Honda MVP section, we actually already touched on this with our bet at the very beginning, the parlay bet. And I believe the two names that are not Cloud9 that anyone would throw out there would be from Team Liquid, Core JJ, and then maybe Jensen would be a secondary there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's going to just be consensus on this. What you got, Mark?
I flopped, like I said, a little bit already. I had Jensen coming into the week. I think we had like a countdown thing where we talked about potential MVP candidates, and I was kind of pumping Jensen up. He had a really good string of like three or four games last 2 weeks where he's going in to set the Shen up. He's playing LeBlanc and 1v1ing Demonte. He's crushing, I think it was Golden Glue in lane. But then this game was a bit of a stinker. Core JJ doesn't have stinkers as far as I can remember.
Not since spring.
Yeah, spring he was bad, but I don't think he hasn't had many stinkers. He's had games where he's outright outright won it for his team and been the biggest playmaker. Him and Jensen also combo together a lot. So it's kind of like Jensen gets the lane advantage and then Core JJ blows it open. And so I think I've definitely flipped to the Core JJ camp. He's getting TL wins in games that I don't think anyone else could. Even Vulcan, I know Vulcan's great, but we saw his Bard and the amount of times that Core JJ's Bard has like solo won them games. I don't think anyone in the league could do it.
Yeah, true. Right now, my MVP nod is probably going to Core JJ, unless we see C9 go back to first 2 weeks C9 and just slaughter all four opponents for the next few games, and then they crush TL in 25 in the tiebreak. I'm like, all right, they're back. C9's back. Never doubted them. You know, and if it's probably Blabber again, if that's the case, right? Like, that's what dominant C9 games look like, is Blabber is up three levels at 3 minutes somehow. like, it's practically impossible, but he finds a way to do it. Okay, cool. But that's probably the two front runners for me. And it's like, hey, if C9 goes back to crushing, cool. But otherwise, Blabber is kind of carrying his team over the line. Core is carrying his team over the line.
Yeah, I think it is pretty close between the two options, with TL options and Cloud9 options. We'll have to see for the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
Let's get to the Twitter questions, though. East Bay Nick, I am also from the Bay. What's up, Nick? Freak is also from the Bay, although...
maybe they mean East Bay, like in Massachusetts or New York. Maybe it's the
Eastern. I'm not part of the East Bay.
Eastern Country Bay.
I mean, there are a lot of bays, I guess.
Well, yeah. Also, the Bay is in the middle, so there's cities all around it. I'm on the southwest of the Bay.
And there's a lot of kind of suburbs that say they're from the Bay.
Too much geography.
Okay, I'm from the Bay. Just letting you know.
Yeah, but I'm just saying when I've been traveling, I've seen people from like Pleasanton and stuff, and they're like, "Oh yeah, God, I'm from the Bay
from
too."
Pleasanton,
and I'm like,
"Are saying that?"
What else do they have, Mark? What else do they have? It's Pleasanton.
I don't know. Get to the Twitter question.
The Pleasanton shade on the dive is what you subscribe to this for.
I think this is on everyone's mind, but should we be hitting the panic button for Cloud9? Oh, yeah. We talked about a panic button. Should we be hitting the panic button for Cloud9's loss specifically to TL, he's citing?
Nope.
I would say no. Watch how Jensen and Broxy talk about that game. And Jensen has a quote, I think. Might even be on the front page right now, but it's like, if they wanted to play normal, they would have crushed us or something. Yeah. It was something along those lines.
Well, so, and his the longer that, because I actually watched it instead of just looking at the quote. Ooh. The entire
Mark is a Pleasanton of analysts right now.
Oh my gosh. The whole sentence was, because of how the early game went, where they got leads in jungle, top, and mid, and he was just like, oh my, you know, he was feeling so doomed. And if you look at the game too, especially from Jensen's perspective, you can get that feeling.
He felt like, bad.
Oh man, he's getting smashed by this set mid. So it had to do a lot with, you know, how the game played out also, with his feeling of, yeah, you know, if they all just had a standard bottom line, they would have crushed us.
All right. So, no panic.
Yeah, the panic, not necessarily there, but it is definitely a different state of the league from the C9 dominance, obviously. Maverick D'Souza. Oh, my God. I definitely butchered that.
That's close. We're good.
What is your take on Team Liquid possibly not making it to Worlds? Yeah, they just beat Cloud9, but I feel their style of play is not going to do well against these lower teams that seem to be revitalized. My picks are Cloud9, FlyQuest, and Golden Guardians or Dig.
Hard disagree. I mean, I take you on Cloud9. I take you on FlyQuest as well. But right now, I said that earlier. TL are still like the easy shoe-in for top two. I think, yes, they are a little bit slower than some other teams. They have a very slow average win time, but they are consistent, right? And so I would actually take them a lot. Like if you're like, hey, I don't think they can take C9 or even FlyQuest down the stretch in a high-intensity best of five, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's a reasonable point, right? When a team can match them toe-to-toe on player skill and then, you know, beat them out in being more dynamic, yeah, sure, I'm on board. Mm-hmm. But a team like Dignitas, I think TL will clap in a best of five 3-0. I think TL are very good. They are the first or second best team in the league right now. And they're headed to Worlds.
Agree.
Yeah. I mean, the Dig point just really shot in the foot. And the other thing I'd say too is like, yeah, Jensen had that game where he feels awful, but that was C9 putting him in those positions. It wasn't like Jensen just like ran it down and turbo inted, which is the thing about TL. They never do that. Impact did it once against FlyQuest. I'll give you that one. But for the most part, they don't do that. They don't make their own unforced errors.
Is there anything that we could dig into on the their style of play will not be good against the lower teams that seem to be revitalized? I think the only thing would be like, you know, people have got on board with specifically Golden Guardians playing that, you know, more aggressive DeMonte roaming around type of thing. Nice cat, Mark.
You didn't see it.
Yeah, I did. honestly, like their early game is not even bad. Like they actually have decent early game stats overall across the board. They are slow to close games out. Like they are not hyper aggressive in that regard. So if you're, you know, looking to play a scaling comp against them and, you know, hope that you're not going to get Dragon Souled at 24 minutes, okay, that might work, but I don't think that's the style that these teams are going for. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing another Koglulu come back out or something like this, or, you know, some heavy split push or rally or something. Like maybe there are more styles out there that we haven't been seeing yet, but
I also would say it's usually not a style thing that makes them, like what beats a slow style often is not like, oh, a fast paced style. It's actually usually skill. A lot of the teams that play a slow style are able to win games by grinding you out because they're just better players and they don't really need to do much to win because they're just going to outperform you in X, Y, and Z situations like laning phase and objective control and these kinds of things. And then what happens is those slow teams go to Worlds and it's not like, oh my God, these Worlds teams are so much faster. It's like they're actually just really good players too, and they're making plays and they're being more proactive than you. And it's the fact that you can't grind them out anymore because they're not losing these skill check situations. That's my personal take on it. Like the reason that there's aggressive teams in North America. TL is not losing to aggressive teams in North America because they're better than them.
It's hard to separate the two because you can always argue that the better, like, oh, this team is more skilled than you, so it's going to be easier. Like the default easier path for a better skilled team to win if they're playing safer, I agree. Like that is the safer way to go about it, is to say, okay, we know we're better, so we're going to pick better scaling and control the game more till we get to this point where we for sure know, all right, we have Azir, Aphelios, Ornn frontline, and like we're going to be able to win the team fight. When you do get to Worlds and you're talking about these better teams that have been playing faster styles are forcing these skill checks on you earlier and quicker, and you crumble because you have not been playing those. I feel like that is a problem in its own that deserves like another discussion of like, if you're all of your games that you'll always practice for and always play on stage are all risk management basically, and you don't try and hone those skills, then you're going to be really rusty in skirmishes early on when, you know, LPL teams and stuff that have been playing this the whole time are attacking you. And you're just like, oh my God, I'm just overwhelmed with the speed.
Yeah.
All right, let's get the anchor questions then. I don't have to read those. Love it.
Hey, Mark, Kobe and Azale. I have a question about fandom within the LCS. For traditional sports, my connection to a team could be related to my state or my college, or might be the team that my family's always rooted for. In the LCS, these factors don't necessarily exist, so how do people decide who to root for? Is it based on players, coaches, owners? Thank you.
It's always been, I think the biggest one is getting attached to players. A lot of it for North America was through streams as well. You know, players' personalities and gameplay and streams and stuff, you get attached to individual personalities. Sometimes that can be an owner that's not a player. Mostly it's players though.
Yeah, personality is everything. Even when you talk about like on a branding level, you can boil it down to personality. You might like FlyQuest because they got like the kind of trees and flowers and they're green and you know, they're feel good vibes, man. Like that can appeal to you, but again, that's nothing to do with geolocation or stuff. That's just another level of personality, though it's an organizational level.
Yeah. And there is some degree of like, hey, my friend told me to root for TSM because he's a TSM fan. Like that happens some. I've heard those stories as well. So if you get in through your friends that you're probably playing these games with, because hey, you're probably a League of Legends player, you know, this co-op game you play with your friends, so you can get into it just from your friends saying, oh, I'm a C9 fan, come be a C9 fan with me. Mm-hmm. So that can be.
I get some tweets now about people who are starting to have kids and they're like wearing C9 clothing, clothing. And so like the caller did mention, you know, my family is this.
Yeah.
That's more to do with the age of the sport more than the online factor.
Right, which is not possible unless your sport is old enough for that to happen, right? So, you know, baseball is hundreds of years old, you know, and whatnot. It's like, well, the league is 10.
We'll get there.
Going on 11.
I hope.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like, I want the 30 years of league, you know, where it's like, yes, you know, I'm a, you know, Golden Guardians fan because my dad is a Golden Guardians fan. Like, cool, let's do it.
Yeah. I like when there are more things that you can use to tie yourself to a team. Geolocation is a great thing because it's so easy for people to be like, this is, you know, my hometown. This is where we are from. And that's kind of why Clutch tried to do the Texas thing, mm-hmm. try to do Golden that when Guardians. They were in there. That's why Overwatch tried to do their geolocation. I don't know how successful that was in having people really associate with those teams. And
The LPL has their teams in cities, right? The teams actually actively travel around to each of the cities. There's home games and whatnot. So they're geolocated as it is right now.
Because people just naturally, you know, want to feel like they're more invested in the team. Like if that team is winning, I also am winning. I'm doing something, you know, good, right? And so those sorts of connections where you feel accomplishment for that accomplishment also is important to find ways to build. Mm-hmm. What about our next anchor question?
Hey, Azaleo and Mark Z, and welcome back, Kobe. My question to you is, with the new summer playoffs format, which do you think is more likely, that the bottom teams are more willing to make changes because there's such a high chance of them getting into playoffs, or that the top teams aren't as likely to take risks because first and second seed mean so much more in terms of your chances to advance in playoffs? Thanks.
Thank you for the welcome back.
This is interesting because we just had an example of this. We just had the Reaper interview where he's like, yeah, you know, looking back at our best of fives on Cloud9, side selection meant so much. So it's really important that we get the first seed. So we're probably going to play something a bit more comfort against Team Liquid. And then obviously pull out the Lux Sona. Yeah. That said, though, even though they lost that game, they saw the tiebreaker at the end of week 9 to take first seed back anyway. And so I think it's seen out of willing to take risks when the results are not risky. And then I think they will, I actually do think they will fight for first seed and they will play standard for the next, well, I'm going to say 5 games because they'll probably tie break. And those will be standard all the way through. They'll play Olaf if they ever can. And then they'll go into playoffs and continue to hope that they can, you know, find new stuff because you want the expanded inventory. As we have seen with teams like Dignitas and Hunted Thieves and everyone else, it's like, right, Papa Smithy said, we don't feel at 1-5 we will make Worlds, thus we are going to change out half of our roster. Like, that is the right thing to do. In the Immortals case, it's like, well, we actually don't think our chances of playoffs are that high. We're going to stick with Alorum and Insanity to give them reps because 2021 is our group. So in that case, they're specifically not making changes, but that's like more of a special thing.
Yeah, my initial reaction to the question would be I would say that the lower teams are likely to, you know, make drastic changes. Bottom 8 teams getting in, I think, is super inclusive. I like your example with the Cloud9 Team Liquid thing. Just diving into it, I don't think Cloud9 got what they wanted out of that experimentation. Their goal, I would presume, with the experimentation was to see how Team Liquid will react in a stage game when they try and throw crazy champ select at them like this and a different mm-hmm. strategy. And yet Cloud9 are the ones that made a lot of mistakes here. And so I don't think that they actually got to learn much as far as like, oh, you know, maybe Team Liquid are going to crumble when we throw this stuff at them. Mark, you're holding your hands up already.
So Sven did an interview and said, I think something along the lines of, we played this comp 15 times in scrims and we had like a 95% win rate with it. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I would say they probably did because I've played comps, you know, I haven't played, but I've coached teams when we had comps that were slamming kids and we're like, okay, everyone's surrendering at 15 minutes. How do we actually close the game out with all melee topside in this? And you actually don't ever have to in scrims because people just surrender. And so I would say there's a chance they still got what they wanted out of because they couldn't just insta-snowball the game. Team Liquid actually did not forfeit at 15 minutes when they fell behind, like what happens in scrims. And they lost the game because they were not clean enough. So I think at least in terms of like getting a lot of VOD review material for Reaper and the team with that comp, I think they got it. They're maybe happy about it. I don't think they're happy they lost, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they would have obviously preferred to play it better, so they would have, you know, better data to work with. But it's pretty interesting. And never mind. I don't want to talk more about scrim info and inside stuff.
Oh, you got some deets? DM me your deets, dude.
I do not.
Oh.
and that's gonna put an end to the entire show. thank Great. You for the anchor questions. Please continue to send those in. Thank you for the Twitter questions. Also hit us all up. You can even tag Freak. He likes it. You know, he likes to feel included. Probably won't be back on the next episode because Azale is coming back. But he likes to take part. That is gonna do it for this week's episode of The Dive. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks again to Freak for joining us, and finally to Honda for making this possible. We will be back at the same time next week, and hopefully Azale will have fully sorted out his move and will be fully set up to join us as well.